Barnstorming the Heartland in a DC-3. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Dan Greider, who is based in Georgia and offers something you can't find anywhere else that I'm aware of, and that is a type rating, either second-in-command or pilot-in-command, on the McDonnell Douglas DC-3. We've talked to Dan in the past. You've probably seen his plane at a couple of the major air shows. I wanted to get back together with Dan as the summer wanes here and talk about an amazing trip that he undertook with some students. I guess you'd call them students, Dan, even though they're all licensed pilots, over the summer. A cross-country trip in the DC-3 that looks a lot to me like modern-day barnstorming. First of all, Dan, thanks for taking a few minutes out. I know you're having a busy week.
Yeah, Paul, how are you this afternoon?
Oh, I'm doing great. I'm having a bluegrass withdrawal thing. I got to get to another air show where you guys are going to be.
I appreciate that. Yeah, we did get to play a lot of music on this this last tour.
Well, it's important to stay instrument proficient, you know.
That's what I think.
All right, well, let's talk about this 6-day trip. Now, you advertised this earlier in the summer. The wording of the advertisement almost sounded like you didn't want anybody to actually take you up on it.
I didn't. When this thing started, I had two or three people kind of prodding me to do this thing. And for me, it's kind of risky as far as mechanicals and weather, and it's also risky on a personality basis. You commit to flying around the country with, you know, a few people that you don't know. It could be really nice, and it could be pure torture. So I had a couple people, and I put out that bulletin, and wouldn't you know, there was some 20 people that responded immediately that said, "Sign me up right now! I want to go on that." And I was really just overwhelmed by the response to that.
Now this was designed to be a 6 or 7 day trip, right? Was it going to originate in Griffin and wind up what, at Oshkosh?
No, it originated in Griffin, Georgia, and terminated in Griffin, Georgia. And where we went in between was anybody's guess.
Okay. Well, that sounds like the kind of trip I haven't been able to plan since I was in high school.
Yeah. Well, it's that way by design, and that way we don't have any failures. We can't say, well, we didn't make it to any place, so no one was unhappy with us, because we didn't have any promises out there, firm promises of any place we really had to be. And everything was so tentative. In fact, when I called Sporty's to order the VFR sectionals for this trip, I talked to the girl there at Sporty's, the chart doctor, and she said, "Okay, fine. I understand you're going on a trip. Where do you want to go?" And I said, "Well, we're not sure on that either." And she was trying to narrow it down. I said, "Why don't you just send me Eastern United States, anything from the Rockies east? Just send me a chart for everything you got."
Oh man. Well, now, all right. So you've got what, five people?
I do. Do you mind if I say their names?
No, go ahead.
My friend Joe from California brought his dog and his bicycle. Great guy, corporate pilot, and Joe was one of the first guys on the list that I couldn't get to turn this down.
What kind of dog was that? It looked like it might be a Jack Russell or something.
It was a Jack Russell.
Oh, so he was the flight engineer for this trip.
He was the flight engineer, and it was a great little dog. That dog went everywhere with us. It stayed loose inside the airplane the whole time we were flying. The dog never complained, and that dog would fetch all day long. It was just a pleasure to have that dog with us.
All right. Who else was along for the ride?
Cliff, also from California, a retired guy, and has owned a lot of airplanes, a highly accomplished pilot. Earl is from the Atlanta area but lives in the Virgin Islands, and he owns a series of Harley-Davidson dealerships. We got to talk quite a bit about motorcycles as well. Mm-hmm. Then I had a Canadian, Andy, that finished all the TSA requirements, and I tried to talk Andy out of this vigorously, and Andy would not let go of this idea either. And as you know, it's quite a job to get the TSA requirements complete to come to the States and do something like this.
Well, you know, I mean, as you know better than anybody, Dan, the opportunities to do this are there might not ever be another opportunity to do a trip like this in a DC-3.
Well, they would. I don't know about ever, but they're definitely pretty rare, and I can see why. The logistics on this and the And the costs, as we found out, to pull this off, were were large, but we did have a great time. And last but not least, I had a guy named Patrick. His father was a retired airline guy, and he's now a air traffic controller at Memphis Center, and very accomplished pilot, and owns an airplane and everything. And when those first 20 or so people emailed back in immediately, I kind of picked through there and picked out five or six or seven of them, and I sent out one email to those six or seven, and it was almost a kind of an email that said, look, guys, you really don't want to do this. I mean, please let me tell you what this is. We're not going to get very high. This airplane's going to break, and you're going to get some hydraulic fluid spilled on you. I got no autopilot. You're going to get thirsty, and we're probably going to get stuck someplace. So if you don't want to go, I'm really okay with that. Just raise your hand and just say you don't want to go. And every one of those guys wrote back in within like 8 hours and said, you know, this is exactly what I want. Count me in. I'm coming. I want to do this.
All right. Well, now they also were willing to write out a check for a little under $4,000 each to take advantage of the second-in-command course.
Exactly. It's the same price we normally charge for our normal SIC course, and each guy wrote out a check for $39.60, and that included food, lodging. We ended up putting 21 hours on the airplane, so they got quite a bargain. Each one of those guys split that 21 hours. Everybody got a lot of left seat time, and the way we just arbitrarily did it was we took off from Atlanta heading west and northwest, and you know, we got a Garmin 430 in the airplane, so we just started hitting airports as we worked our way west and northwest that day. And any airport within 20 miles, we'd dial it into the Garmin, and we'd make either a low pass or most of the time a touch and go, and then just keep on going. So the first day alone, you know, we must have stopped at 23 or 24 airports the first day.
Well, if nothing else, the hydraulics kept exercised then.
We kept the hydraulic system well lubricated.
All right. When we come back from the breakdown, I want to talk about the barnstorming aspect of this, because the DC-3 makes a big impression at little grass strips when you touch down. My guest is Dan Greider. We're talking about barnstorming in a DC-3. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Paul Plack. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Okay. Right up front, let me say that Garmin does not give tax advice. We have lawyers who cringe at the very thought of suggesting there might be tax advantages to buying a new Garmin avionics system this year.
Did he say tax advantages?
Could that be construed as tax advice, either express or implied?
Yeah, like I said, lawyers. So I guess I won't be telling you that this year Congress is offering special bonus depreciation up to 50% in year one for qualified business equipment placed in service during 2008. Business equipment like, say, a new Garmin avionics stack. But you didn't hear that from me, right?
What did he just say?
Okay, better check with your tax consultant for guidance and your Garmin dealer for the installation. Garmin. Follow the leader.
See your tax advisor for guidance.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here with Dan Greider, who does flight training for a second-in-command or even pilot-in-command type rating in a DC-3. It's the only place you can still get it. And apparently there's a fair list of people who still want to do this before their careers are over, because there's no real commercial reason to ever do this anymore. We're talking about Dan's cross-country flight at low altitude with some guest students in a DC-3 this past summer. And Dan, you were, I say on the road, but in the air for, what, 6 days, as it turned out?
I guess we touched on 7 days. We did the whole thing. It was a 7 day trip. But yeah, we had a different destination. Actually, not a destination, but a different point that we finally plopped down every single night. And most of those were purely by random. And I believe five of those we simply quit flying when we were out of gas and it was dark. It's time to land.
All right. Now you're doing a lot of flying at 500 to 1,000 feet above ground level. And you're just dropping in unannounced down little towns all along the way. This must have created some hubbub.
Well, it did. And, you know, in addition, Paul, I had my my best friend, Jeff Pritchard, is the world-class fiddle player, and he went with us on this. So every place we stopped, no matter if it was for lunch or to take a break or evening, we pulled out stuff and just started playing music. And first of all, if you have done two or three touch-and-goes at some tiny little farm town in Kentucky or Indiana, Illinois or Iowa or something like that, and that town has not ever seen an aircraft this large doing touch-and-goes at their little county airport, it automatically draws 50 or 70 or 100 people to come out to the airport fence and see what in the world is going on. So mm-hmm. as soon as we're stopped and the propellers are stopped, we all pile out of the airplane, and, of course, the people start walking towards it. And we pull out musical instruments and start playing, whether they want us to or not.
Well, and they're so in love with the plane that they'll actually sit through the music.
Sometimes they sat through it.
Well, now, I saw some of the pictures in your email, and it looked as though all these guys had at least some element of musical skill, too.
No, not all of them, but everybody appreciated music, and at least they said they did. Maybe it was just to appease me, but... I'll just say that everyone tolerated our music very well, and every place we went, especially for the evening, by the time it was time to shut down and go in town and find some place for a good dinner or something like that, we found some really nice places. And Jeff is a natural attraction on the fiddle. The man is just a magician on that fiddle. So my guitar playing meagerly supports his abilities there, but people are just mesmerized by his ability on the fiddle. So we drew quite a crowd wherever we went for our evening stuff as well, and we just had a great time doing it.
You know, I think back to the early days of rock and roll music, and I remember in particular one picture of the Doobie Brothers sometime in the mid-70s, and I think they had a DC-3 that they were using to fly around, and it said Doobie Liner on the side of it.
Yeah.
But I just remember all these musicians sitting around outside a DC-3, and I was reminded of that picture when I was reading through your stuff here. What are let's talk briefly about a couple of the more interesting experiences you had. You got in and out of some pretty tight places with that big plane.
We did. A lot of the little county strips that we encountered, we tried to use about a 3,500-foot paved as a guideline for what we were looking at on the Garmin. Anything less than 3,500, we bypassed it, and that's mostly because I was, allowing a student in the left seat to make the touch-and-go at that airport. So mm-hmm. having 4,000 and 5,000 feet is a lot more wiggle room to allow them just a little bit more room and a little bit more time on the runway before we got to push the power up again and let them get a little bit more out of it. But we did take the airplane into Gaston's, which is in Arkansas, and a grass strip, very short grass strip, and it's plenty wide except at the approach end, and none of us were absolutely sure about the feasibility of that, but when we got there, the conditions were ideal for landing into the wind, and then when we left the next day, the conditions were also very nice for a nice headwind takeoff coming out of there, so it worked out really nice.
All right, now one of the great pictures in your email from this trip shows you standing on the wing of the DC-3 playing the trombone, accompanying a hula hooper. What's the story there?
I have no comment.
It's a picture I've never seen before.
We did make one stop in Oshkosh, and that's just because one of our pilots, the Canadian Andy, was determined he wanted to be at Oshkosh at least one day, and I had free armbands and a lot of connections at Oshkosh, so we did stop in there and overnighted, and we played music underneath the wing, and the hula hoop thing, I have no idea. It came from a whole bunch of people that wanted to get their pictures taken on the wing of the DC-3, which, of course, I said, that's fine with me. So everybody, we must have put, 30 or 40 people up there, one at a time and two at a time. And then this hula hooper approached me and wanted to know, while we were playing music, if she could hula hoop on top of the wing. And I said, well, yeah, that sounds like a good idea to me.
All right.
And you know how Oshkosh is, Paul. A lot of times there is no real particular reason for what happens up there.
Well, and Dan, I know you a little bit too now, and I think it all fits together nicely. You've got an interesting life, Dan. You fly for a major airline, and when I first made contact with you to see about doing this this Aero News special feature, you were in Dubai. You play bluegrass music. You fly a DC-3 around and get people to pay to do it with you, and it seems like you've got a pretty neat life.
I do, Paul. I'm very thankful. I'm out here in Branson, Missouri here this week on vacation with my family. I've got a beautiful wife and two beautiful kids, and they're what I treasure the most. And I get to do a lot of unusual things with vintage aircraft that most people would just kill to get to do. and I treasure those moments. I get to meet a lot of World War II vintage era individuals, and I treasure those opportunities just to get to talk with them and share their experiences from especially the war times and things like that. So it has been an interesting ride.
Well, now let's let our listeners in on a few details. First of all, your co-pilots all wound up with their second in command type rating in the DC-3, right?
That's correct. In the 7 days, we completed the FAA requirement for the ground school and all the paperwork and all the flying and takeoffs and landings. If you read FAR 6155, it outlines, it actually comes from an FAR order where that second in command type rating came into to play. And that type rating is not a requirement. It's just something that's available. If you meet the requirements, then you can be issued. So during the course of the 7 days, which is easy to do, it's kind of like taking 7 days to get a tailwheel endorsement. It's mm-hmm. just not that big of a deal. So we completed our ground school and our paperwork and all the required items. Plus, each guy got to fly the airplane a tremendous amount. And yes, over the flatlands, I don't know if any of your listeners have ever got to do this, but over the flatlands of the true heartland of America, the hardcore middle of America, this time of year when the fields are green with harvest, it is just an absolute pleasure to fly that huge of an airplane at 500 AGL, and we did. We took that airplane for many times, several hours at a time, except for a takeoff and landing. Oftentimes, we had to climb up to get into the traffic pattern at an airport, and it is just a spectacular view out your windshield, and of course, we always had two or three or four people crowding up in the cockpit, looking out the front windows and looking around and taking pictures and taking videos. So it was really, for me, Paul, it rates right up there, probably one of the top four or five aviation experiences of my lifetime. I'll treasure that trip forever.
All right, well, let's talk about the future. You hedged a little bit about how this might never be happening again. So I assume that you might, if somebody twisted your arm, do this kind of trip again.
Well, if we do, it turned out to be far more expensive than I thought. And our main risk on doing something like this and doing as many takeoffs and landings is a mechanical problem. And you can imagine the complications if I had something catastrophic occur, like I lost a cylinder or had some kind of a large airplane problem at some podunk town in mm-hmm. Iowa and I was grounded there. Now, how do I get mechanics and tools and jacks and parts up to Iowa? And then I've got five people that are with me that are stuck, that can't get out, and the airplane could be grounded for 2 or 3 weeks while we get logistics and parts in. So it's a huge risk mechanically mm-hmm. to do that many takeoffs and landings that far away from home. It's just a risk.
I guess we'll leave that decision for the future and see how much fan mail comes in. But if someone wants to get their type rating in the DC-3, how do they get in touch with you and find out more about your program?
It's called theaviatornetwork.com, and you have to use the word the, so theaviatornetwork.com. We stay fairly busy with it. It's not a multi-million-dollar operation, but flight training and our corporate sponsorship with HRPA is, for us, what keeps that airplane in the air and airworthy and flying on a regular basis. And we enjoy doing the flight training just because we get to meet so many unusual people from so many walks of life and backgrounds, and they all come in and they stay 3 or 4 days, and I put them in the left seat and let them fly the airplane, and they get their credential, and we have a great time doing it.
Well, Dan, we really appreciate your taking a few minutes out to tell us about the trip. It sounds like it was great fun, and if someone makes it to the website, can they sign up to get these emails that I'm enjoying whenever they come around?
Yeah, if they just send me a note off the website there and say, hey, put me on the newsletter list. The newsletters are not very professional and not very organized, but I always include a lot of pictures of students that have been in the past 3 or 4 weeks and what we've done with the airplane and things like that, and try to make it just a colorful experience so somebody getting that newsletter can see kind of what we've been up to.
All right, Dan, listen, thanks very much and have a great week.
Yes, sir, Paul. Thank you.
My guest has been Dan Grider, and you've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.